From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Good afternoon and welcome to the April 25th, 2006 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here on KUAR in Little Rock. Our topic today is outsider art. Glad to have you with us here, and I do want to tell you here at the outset of the program, we're kind of back on our regular schedule starting next month. We were off schedule with the Arcade 2006, as you know, but we'll be back the first and third Tuesdays of May and then from there on out. And the next couple of program topics I want to let you know about. The first one next time will be on wine, then the program after that will be on mobile homes. So if you have any interest in those topics and you have any comments you'd like to make, you can go to ytt.kuar.org, click on this month, and you'll be able to see the questions, and you can send some comments, and we can get you on the part of the program too. And then there's also a link there to the archive. On that, you'll be able to see all the past programs we've done. Then if you go to kuar.org, click on podcasts, you can listen to many of our past programs as well as the longer version of this program today on Outsider Art. Outsider art. When I first heard the topic mentioned to me by a listener who listens by way of the web, her name is Joanne Zabo from Kingwood, Texas. In fact, she has sent several emails over many of the different topics we've done in the past. I thought, what is outsider art? And through doing a little bit of research here and preparing for the program, you folks are really in for a treat here today. Outsider art is something that I'm sure all of us have seen throughout our lives and maybe didn't know it by that name, but it's a very exciting kind of thing. And going back to what I mentioned about the web, I went ahead and put on under this month several links to outsider art. So if you happen to be by your computer right now and you go to kuar.org, you can hit click on programming, scroll all the way to the bottom to Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, and click on this month. You'll be able to follow along and see all the different art that our artists are talking about today. I have three guests with me here speaking from the various generations. Starting with the older generation is Cleveland Turner. He's an artist, and he's in Houston, and he's known there as the Flower Man. And when I say there, he's probably known all over the world as the Flower Man because of his amazing home and yard. Cleveland transformed his yard as a fulfillment of a childhood dream and as a part of his effort to remain sober, which he's now been for more than 20 years. And he joins us from Houston at the Orange Show, which I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about as we get into the program here. Then speaking from the middle generation is Barbara Hinton. Barbara's a longtime resident of Houston. She's a trustee of the Orange Show Center for Visionary Art, which is a grassroots organization that preserves outsider art and celebrates the artists and everyone. She's traveled throughout the United States to visit outsider artists and to see their work through an Orange Show program called Eye Opener Tours. And then speaking from the younger generation is a lady by the name of Erica Nelson. She's an independent artist and an educator who studies outsider art and roadside attractions. She lived next door to an outsider art environment, the Garden of Eden in Lucas, Kansas. She moved there to this rural town of about 400 people. After living on the road for a couple of years visiting such environments, she travels about 6 months out of the year with her own mobile museum, which houses the world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. That was fun to say. I'd like to say it over. And with community-based art projects and residencies. I'm glad to have all three of you with us here today on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Cleveland Turner, I'd kind of like to start with you in the older generation. You've been involved in what's been called outsider art, I guess, for a number of years now. Tell us a little bit about what outsider art is and how you got into it.
My name is Cleveland Turner, better known as the Flower Man. I kind of like that name better than I love Cleveland. That's my real name. I don't know whether you ever heard about it or not, but I used to be a winoer, a skid row, living on the skid row, and drinking wine. I just went on out in the woods, sleeping out in the woods, all the way up the houses, on the bridges, and eating out of sets of chicken dumpsters and Popeye's dumpster whenever I felt like eating. A waddle like me don't eat that much. Anyway, at the end of those 17 years I had on the skid row, I ended up in St. Joseph Hospital. At the end, it just knocked me off my feet, drinking so much of that wine. So white lady found me out, laying out, and she happened to be going to work that morning and just looked over there at the scattered shot of weed, and I was laying over there outside of a street they call a Chinverd, out there in the Third Ward area. And so she called the ambulance and had me picked up and sent to the hospital, and stayed in that 3 weeks. Didn't know I was even living. I was so far gone, drinking so much wine. So at the end of those 3 weeks that I stayed in the hospital, I had a vision. I had this big, pretty vision, and it was just made out of junk, and it was just going around like a whirlwind. And I said then, I said, ooh, that sure is pretty. So, and I said, if the good Lord give me power and strength and take that taste of wine out of my mouth, if I get my life straightened out, I was going to get my little house and go around and pick up junk and hang it up on the house and just see what it looked just that pretty, like that vision I had. And that's the way I got started with my art. And it just put up out of you name it. Anything, a broken clock or a broken doll and cow horns and you name it.
Did you just go around all day long collecting stuff?
Collecting junk, collecting stuff. And anything I see, I knew to pick it up. If it's just too big for me to put on my back, that's the only ring where I pass by.
Well, now I read a little bit about the fact that I think you were renting a place at that time, weren't you?
Right. Right. I was renting a house over there on Sampton Street, a little old corner house, and it was a little bit, I had it choked down with all of my art I had picked up.
Did you know it was art at the time?
I really didn't know it was art. No more than I was just trying to make that vision I had and tried to make it look like that vision, and that's all I had in mind. I was just filling out that vision I had.
Well, when did you know you were done with that vision? Did you ever
get? I never get through with it. I never get through with it. It never be an end to it. Suzanne was the first one came by and told me it was art.
Have you added to it in different kinds of things? Now I know you are on their website at orangeshow.org, and I'm sure there's many different projects that you've been involved with over time. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your other projects?
I've had it out in two or three places. The first May, I was supposed to have it over to TSU and do a installation over there for them. I headed down to First City National Bank and the Fine Art Music. Oh, I think that's Fannie and Mae. And I was down at the downtown college, I think. It used to be the old building, the M&M building, years ago.
How did you get the name of the Flower Man? Is that what the vision of it is flower?
No. People gave me the Flower Man name. I don't know what Suzanne the Orange Show gave me that name, or the people just come by there and start calling me Flower Man. But now, I always did love flowers. And when I was out in the skid row, sleeping and out in the wood, anything bloom, I'll take care of it.
Well, now you're living in your own place, though. You're not renting right now, correct?
No, I'm not renting now.
Well, what's your yard look like now?
Oh, it just looked just ask me that about a month now, I'll tell you it's a bouquet with flowers. With flowers, but they just begin to get blooming, and I've been adding on more than doing my little paint, getting my spring work out the way. This is such a larger place now, and it keeps me busy all the time.
Do you know, how old are you, Flower Man?
I'll be 72 years old the 25th of May.
Well, as you've been going through your life, have you known any other people, or have you noticed that anyone else was doing the same sort of thing you were doing?
I haven't known none yet. I haven't noticed anyone with the ill. They always come from pencils, drawing art, you name it, high education. And you know I don't have no education, so that gift I had, that vision I had, and I said gift from, I call him God, and gave it to me. I don't have no book learning. If I had to make that art from education, I'd be lost. I couldn't do it.
I understand. In fact, that's one of the things I kind of want to get into a little bit later here. Stay with this here. I want to move on to Barbara Hinton in the middle generation. Barbara Hinton, how does outsider art fit into your life, and can you kind of expand a little bit on what the Flower Man has been talking about?
Well, Cleveland said that he's never seen anyone who does exactly what he does, and he's absolutely correct. That's the beauty about outsider art and these sorts of things. Every piece of art, every environment is totally, completely unique. And it's wonderful fun to go around the country and see all sorts of different things. Here in Houston, we're very, very blessed. Houston is a very sort of entrepreneurial, arts-oriented city. And along with Cleveland, we've had some other individuals who've created things. Jeff McKissick started in the 50s and worked for 25 years to build what's the Orange Show today. And the Orange Show Center for Visionary Art was formed to preserve that place. And then we discovered that there was another place in another part of town where a man had completely covered his house with beer cans. It's called the Beer Can House or the Tin Can House. And then we discovered Cleveland. And so we just try to preserve these wonderful icons of creativity. It's just marvelous.
Well, since you're in the middle generation, can you kind of give our listeners a sort of a taste of what a definition of outsider art is?
Well, the true definition is that it's art created by people who are outside the mainstream of the art community. In other words, Cleveland said he'd never had an education about art. Well, Jeff McKissick, who created the Orange Show, never considered himself an artist. John Milkovich, who created the Beer Can House, never considered himself an artist. Because we have embraced Cleveland, he's a little bit different now. But I'm not sure that very many of these people ever go to museums. They don't know other artists. They don't study art as an education opportunity. They just are almost obsessed and compulsive about expressing their creative vision, just as Cleveland did. He expressed his creative vision. So many of the outsider artists, if you said you can't do that, they couldn't not do it. It's such an obsession and such a compulsion.
Well, let me ask you, if a person is recognized a little bit as being an artist when they didn't even know they were, do they begin to change their outsider art?
Sometimes they do, but usually they do not. Usually they maintain that wonderful innocence, that primary vision that they had, and hopefully usually they do not.
And I guess on the occasion that they do, then they actually fit, they would normally then be called a regular artist in the traditional sense, is that right?
That's correct. They're still outsider.
Well, you know, again, in the middle generation, the boomers have always been tagged from the 60s on as being kind of a little bit out there. Were there trends in the middle generation society that made outsider art themes attractive to people in their middle ages?
I think as a generation, we were exposed to sort of non-traditional materials in art. I can remember when I was a little girl and would go to summer camp, we would make art out of popsicle sticks.
Oh, I did that too.
Or art out of macaroni and beans and stuff like that. So it's not traditional materials that were used to make art. And then the outsider artists are doing very much the same things. They're using non-traditional materials, found objects, materials that are not ordinarily associated with art. And therefore, I think as a generation, we sort of think, well, that's really cool. Look what Cleveland's done with what we consider to be junk.
Is the middle generation the one that more or less found outsider art or named it or put it in a box?
Well, I think we're the ones that named it. And I hope it's not in a box because it doesn't need to be in a box.
That's not where it's supposed to be, is it? Well, Barbara Hinton, do you recall any going even farther back than Cleveland's time? Is there any history to outsider art?
Well, think about roadside attractions. And Erica can talk to this even more specifically, even though she's from the younger generation, she has studied roadside attractions. Think about driving down the highway in the United States and seeing somebody who's made teepees on the side of the road, and that's there's a state park in Texas that the shelters are Indian teepees, and there's the Paul Bunyan characters that you might see on the side of the road, or there's an ice cream store that looks like an ice cream cone. Those sorts of things are outsider art, too, that really sort of predate this more this generation that we're talking about.
Well, since you mentioned Erica Nelson, let's get into that younger generation perspective a little bit. Erica Nelson, join in with us here about outsider art from the younger generation's perspective. Do you think it fits your generation as well as it did the middle and the older?
I think so. I think the difficulty that my generation faces in either finding a place in the art world or the outsider art world is that it's very hard to be naive anymore. There is so much information at your fingertips. You can research something in 2 days that it would have taken 20, 30 years to do formerly just because of the wealth of information that's immediately accessible. So I think there is a greater appreciation for outsider art just in the same breath as insider art. I don't know that my generation sees much difference between the two until you get to the purity of vision that comes through in this outsider art speaks to every single generation. And that's sort of what drew me into this. It's specific in the art world, but it's general in the real world. And that's what I so love about it. It's a bridge between what we think of as art world and real world. And I don't think that will ever not have a place.
Well, since you've spent some time traveling around and mentioning also the roadside art, tell us a little bit about how roadside art fits into outsider art.
The art environment that I live next to was built at the turn of the century. So it was built in 1907. It's called the Garden of Eden, and it was built as a tourist attraction. So this was one man trying to express himself in a visual way, in a way that was stunning enough to get travelers to stop and come and visit him. So he was using art as tourist attraction, and it's sort of that perfect meld of if you build something amazing, it'll get someone to stop. And especially in rural communities, that's what a lot of these roadside attractions were built up around, getting somebody to pull off the interstate and come visit your small town because you have to see this amazing thing. Sometimes it's an art environment like Dinsmore's Garden of Eden in Lucas, which is made out of concrete. It illustrates populist party politics in addition to the Garden of Eden story. Or sometimes it's whimsical, like the Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox statues from Bemidji, built in the 30s. It's a Minnesota monument commemorating a legend of the area. So it's a way for some of these individuals or small towns to assert their identity in such a bold, amazing way that you have no choice but to stop unless you have blinders on.
Let me go back to Cleveland Turner with this question. And Cleveland, now that you're in your place and you have rebuilt your artwork as you have, is there any way that it will be protected long after you're gone?
You probably know Rick Lowe run Prospect Row House.
Actually, no, I don't, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, it was a place that, let me tell you a little bit about the house. Him and I bought that house together, went in half and brought the house. I paid 20 and he paid the 20 of the Row House. And I was talking about a will, and whenever I die, I want it Flower Man to be still going on with his art when the body be dead. So I wanted to leave my portion of the house with all my other art. And if he can get someone else to come in there and just see after it, just meet the peoples. I love to meet peoples come by there, and like the young lady just got through saying, my art be up there in a get-over neighborhood, and if you be two or three blocks off from it, can see it. You got to turn around and come back and see what is it, because it just shine out like that. But anyway, I want mine to be going on, and you know, we was talking about that's the way I want it.
Bill, let me jump in.
Sure.
This is Barbara. As I mentioned earlier, one of the reasons that the Arne Show Center for Visionary Art was established was to preserve places like Cleveland's home. And Cleveland has also done a lot of art workshop with young people that are in his neighborhood so that he has developed a following, a community that loves him and loves his work. So we as his community will certainly do our absolute best to make sure that his environment is protected and preserved just as we are the Arne Show and the Beer Can House.
Well, Cleveland, do you consider your art to be alive?
Yes, sir. Really do. I look at it just that way. It's so live, it just throw you by there to see it. If you let me say, 10 block from it, if you can see it, it's alive. So say it got that much power to it, it just draws you to it. So I really think it is alive.
Well, when you're there showing your art off to the people that come by, do you notice that if it's older people, middle-aged people, or younger people, do you notice a difference in the way that they look at it?
The young one just gets so deep off in it, they just can't understand it, but they still love it, love it, love it. The oldest one, my age, and then the middle, they love it, and they just haven't saw it anything like it before.
So you see a lot of people shaking their heads then, huh?
Right.
but more smiles.
What is this? What reason why you did this? You know it. What is all of this? And I don't collect nothing no good. It's got to be junk.
Well, and that's what people respond to. It's a true vision. It's not something that somebody told you how to do.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how old you are, if you're the maker or the viewer. You understand if something's true when you see it, and that's what all of these environments are. They speak so directly that you can't help but stop. Even if you don't understand it, that doesn't mean that you can't like it.
Well, Erica Nelson, let me ask you from the younger perspective, do you see any copying of outsider art?
I don't know if outsider art can be copied, because you can't fake being true. You can't take somebody else's statement and use it as your own with the same conviction, because I think Barbara mentioned before, it's sort of this obsession, and to be completely obsessed with your artwork, you can't base that on a copy or on a lie. In that same tone, though, there's a gallery in Waxahachie, Texas, that has some great examples of outsider art, and one of their artists is a copier. He copies portraits of presidents from dollar bills and $5 bills and $10 bills. So he's copying motif, but he's doing it over and over and over and over and over again in this obsessive way that is turned into his true expression of this copied motif. So I don't think you can recreate one of his works with the same passion and the same intensity and still be true. And it's just easy to see when it's a fake.
And do you think that the younger generation is anxious to find their own vision so that they can be expressive in outsider art, or are they choosing to go in the traditional ways?
That's hard to say, just because it is such an individual thing. I know some young outsider artists. I know some young insider artists. And because those lines are so blurry, I think it now comes down to true expression. And whether that happens inside of school or outside of school, whether that's undergrad or grad school or even high school, the definitions are just so blurry that it's exciting, because it means all the possibilities are open, but it also means that you're not going to have just traditional painters anymore. You're not going to have just traditional assemblage artists anymore. You're not going to have people only using non-traditional materials. They're all sort of amalgamating together. So it's a weird, exciting place to be in, just seeing where art can go. And it's still going to feed off of all of these things around us, because that's just where society is now. We're in an information age, and all of those resources are available. And I think that's sort of what conceptual art, too, was being based on, really pushing those boundaries. But when those boundaries are so, so expanded, now we're hunting for the boundaries.
If you're just joining us here this afternoon on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, we're talking about outsider art. My guest with me, Cleveland Turner, who's called the Flower Man down in Houston. He's speaking from the older generation. Barbara Hinton, who's also there in Houston, is with the Orange Show. She's speaking from the middle generation. And then that last voice you heard was Erica Nelson, and she's speaking from the younger generation. And she travels around with the world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. That is so much fun to say. Again, I want to remind you, if you happen to be by your computer, go to the web and check our site. You can follow along and see some of the different links that will take you to some of the outsider art we've been talking about here. I'd like to go back to Barbara Hinton there in the middle generation. Barbara, talking about that definition there again, will outsider art actually someday become insider art?
Well, outsider art is very collectible today. So in that respect, I guess it's been embraced by art collectors, at least certain art collectors. Certainly not everyone is a fan of outsider art, but it'll never be inside the museum, in my opinion.
Why not?
It's always sort of created outside that museum environment.
Could Cleveland's work be put in a museum?
It's been shown in galleries. And it's been shown in other institutional places
several times,
but it's not created there.
Does it then become insider art when it's shown in a gallery?
Well, I guess you could say that. except no, it's really not.
Well, I hear a struggle between outsider and insider. Outsider artists do not want to be inside artists. Any one of you can take that.
Want to address that?
I've met both. I think once people get very conscious of the definition of outsider artist and start becoming worried of, oh, did I compromise myself, and oh, am I starting to become insider? I think that can happen to some of the ones that are maybe less obsessed with that true vision that they are trying to put forth. But I think most cases, You can't tell an outsider artist what to do, no matter what. They're going to do what they're going to do because that's what they do.
Well,
and there's no way you can put
that
inside.
You're reading my mind. You're so right.
And you can't put that inside anywhere.
Is there resistance from the inside art world to the outside art world?
I think there will always be in some sections, just like there are conflicts between what's perceived as the art world and the craft world. Right. There are always going to be small sections of, no, this is ours, nobody else can be in here, and you're not real. But there's going to be so many more people bridging those gaps that I think that's like any industry.
Let me ask the Flower Man about technology, and I know that we're going into the older generation there where technology really didn't come into the early part of your life or even into the expression when you first started. Do you put anything that you'd call technology into your work there, Flower Man? I'm wondering if you have an old broken down computer in your work or an old broken down anything call technology.
I got an old broken down TV. Part of a TV, and I don't think I have it computer yet.
You haven't made anything out of technology stuff then, right?
Can't thank you so much. I don't think so.
Well, Barbara Hinton, in the middle generation there, is technology going to affect outsider art at all? Have you seen any expression that way?
I think it affects the middle generation sort of the way Erica referenced it earlier, that it's so easy to research and get information now, and there's so much information available. And then the other way that technology is going to impact outsiders is that, as you mentioned, there's going to be equipment, materials that are available that have been discarded, and so those will become tools for the outsider artist to use.
What about Eric and Nelson there, the younger generation? Do you guys embrace technology for expression?
Absolutely. And I was just talking with somebody else before we called in that I think it's harder. It's going to be just as hard now to find first grader who can't turn on a computer as it's just as hard to find that now as it was 10 years ago to find a first grader who could turn one on. So technology is such an integral part of the daily experience of American children. And this is really just talking about America, Canada, what we usually call the developed world. It is such an integrated part of development now that it's hard to imagine being without technology.
Well, if you're a young person and you've been around computers all your life and you've done graphics, can you make outsider art with graphics, or is that just something that is totally inside?
I think you can. That's what sampling is all about. DJs do it all the time with found records. You go to the record store and get all these amazing works that somebody else has done, but you just take out little snippets and physically manipulating a record, podcasting, doing guerrilla podcasting, taking over airwaves or giving them a different sort of voice, or found objects, found sound. All of that can be translatable to the technology era.
You know, I'm just kind of sitting here thinking that this very program, which is coming from a public radio station in the middle of the nation here in Little Rock, I guess you could say is a form of outsider art because we're really not recognized nationally in any way, but it is an expression of opinions and that sort of thing. Or am I just patting myself on the back here?
No, I think that's exactly the same thing because everybody has access to it too. There can be somebody in Australia listening online, and that is the major global shift that really changes those definitions of insider and outsider because everybody does have such amazing access.
Well, is outsider art strictly visual?
I don't think so.
And can you think of any examples that go beyond just the visual of outsider art?
Anything time-based.
Like time capsules?
That's like a mental form of outsider art. That's a snapshot of society that you can only wonder about until you crack it open. Or even when you pass over a time capsule that somebody else has buried so long ago, it has its own definition of time and space that is outside of our normal everyday. So.
Well, Cleveland, it sounds to me like what you have in your yard is a time capsule of art that you've created. Is that close?
As far as I can understand your word, it's just close to it over and over.
It's a collection of things that came from your era.
Yes, and I have some that was back in my baby days, such as canned goods. We used to can some like opals, peaches and things. I got those, and I tell you, I'm going on 72 years old, and my mother's been passed about 50-something, and I still got some of those cane preserves, cane paths, those things like that. And I got in the house, I got the old trading comb. My sister and is new to trading the rest of the sisters have with. And I got the old temporary fireplace that I used to cut wood, and I got the old tea kettle sitting on it and got the red fire up on it like it, I used to cut when I was a boy. Well, I got some of those antique things, and I call myself antique. Yeah.
What's the strangest thing that you have in your collection?
The strangest thing that I have is an armadillo.
An armadillo?
Armadillo. Now, and I got a little bit stranger thing than that. I got a, I, when we was, my home is back in Mississippi, that little town they call Brandon, right out of Jackton, Mississippi, and out in the country. And I had a cow named Susie, and I milked that cow for about 14 years. And so when the house broke up, what I mean, all everybody left the house, and I came out here in Texas in 62. And I told you about I had 17 years of skid row life. I didn't go back home in those 20-some years and all with the few years before my drinking got so heavy. I worked for Wide Sheet Mill for 7 years and 6 months, and then my drinking got so heavy and took off. But what I'm trying to say, in about 20-some years, I went back home, and me and my homeboy were walking out through the woods, and he said, "Your cow died over here somewhere in this corner." And we walked on over in there, and I found Susie's head. And I still got brought that head out in Houston, and I got it painted up now and got my picture right up in the fireplace of Susan's home. So that's the very interesting piece that I got, something that come from my baby days.
Well, Barbara Hinton, let me ask you a question. I'm also a middle-generation person, and those of us in the middle generation that are lucky enough to have grandkids, there's probably not a refrigerator around it that does not have something hanging on it that was created by their grandkids. And I guess you call that refrigerator art. Is that outsider art?
Yeah, to a certain extent, it certainly is, particularly if your grandkid just can't stop making it. It's the passion that makes it outsider.
Throughout the discussion of this particular topic, I'm torn between the outside and the inside. Will there come a time when outsider will be insider, and then there will be a new outsider? Let's give that to Erica Nelson. Do you see that happening at all?
I think so. I think it has happened in... It continues to happen. It ebbs and flows. And I think part of that is also living in a very commercial age now. Whenever there is something new and interesting, it does sort of get taken over, which just means that the people doing that very specialized, very unique thing end up moving on to a new specialized, unique thing. And then some of the older ones get dropped. If there was a computer programmer right now working on a Commodore 64. That used to be very inside. Now that would be so quaint and out there and outside that if he's obsessed about it and is making amazing thing on this old Commodore 64, all of a sudden he's like an outsider programmer. So I think it's just a continual redefinition and flow of ideas and ownership. I think they're always both going to exist, but they're always both going to change the definition of the other.
I wish I could say that I'm one of these people who can remember names, but I'm not. I'm like a lot of people who try to remember something and you can't quite remember it there. And right now I'm struggling trying to remember some of the names of what I guess you'd say would be modern artists who have done some weird things. And I'm trying to think of the name of the artist. And those of you listening, most of you'll know it, but I don't. But I'm going to admit it anyway. The artist that just did the draperies in Central Park and
Christo.
Yeah.
Christo and Jean-Claude.
Is that outsider art or is that art?
It's insider.
It is inside, even though it's one of a kind, specialized type of thing. It's still inside.
Yeah, they've been working inside the art world, inside the museum system, inside the gallery system,
inside
the commission system for ages.
So there are boundaries then.
Yeah, there are still boundaries, but they're blurry. There are some blurs. I think there's always going to be some definites, but there are people who can shift between the worlds or work with both worlds and still not compromise that true vision.
Well, I'm a little bit worried listening to you talk about Cleveland's work. Then what if an exhibitor came along and said, "We're going to take everything he's got and put it in a museum"? Would it then become inside?
No, I don't think it would, because the spark that prompted Cleveland to create this work is different from an inside spark, an inside art tradition. It really is the passion, Phil, that makes the difference. And it's also a non-commercial passion. Cleveland never expected to be paid for the work that he does. Christo
right.
and Jean-Claude always expect some sort of a remuneration. So the traditional artists have a more commercial aspect to them than the outsider artists do.
Well, those of us in public radio totally understand that. We don't do it for the money.
Those of us in nonprofits do too.
And those of us in between the worlds see those gray areas also.
Well, Cleveland Turner, let me ask you about looking ahead in the future. I'm sure as you've been pondering your life and what you've been doing, as you look to the future, what do you think you're going to see in the way of outsider art? Do you have anything that you're concerned about? Are you worried about outsider art in the future?
No, I'm not worried because I just go around and pick up so much that I just always have enough to keep it going.
Do you have anybody that's come up to you and said, I'd like to do what you do. Can you teach me how to do this?
Oh, I have had, well, two at least a few years ago. But I tell them, just stick around and watch me. And that's by far as I went with them, you know, because I think everybody, you know, I don't mind helping, but everybody ought to do their own thing.
Can you tell if those people have a vision that they're trying to do, or are they trying to copy your work?
That's the only way they can do it. They can copy and probably do it, but I don't think they have that enough, patience to go around and collect junk like I do and put it together. They want to come from the high class away. I don't think they, let me say, stoop that low in the garbage can and pick out, you know, out of garbage and what people in mood and throw away something. They want to come from the highway. And I don't think they was willing. I have seen anything like it before, and I've been traveling around a few cities and through town, and I haven't seen anything not exactly like it since I've been doing it.
Well, Barbara Hinton, as you look to the future, there, of course, in the middle generation, you're looking, I guess, at the back and at the future. What do you see as the future for outsider art?
I think there is a good future for outsider art, and I think one of the reasons is because our world is getting so homogenized. You're losing so many of the sort of little mom-and-pop operations that have always been such an integral part of our society. And when everything is the same, people really have a tendency to want to break out of that sameness and do something that just is radically different and radically expresses their own creativity and their own passion. So I think that we're going to see even more artistic endeavors and more people that are trying to break out of the sameness.
Do you see many people in the middle generation going along with what you're just talking about, that who are, I wouldn't say necessarily in a midlife crisis, but are willing to stop more or less and smell the roses and actually go out and do something creative? Are you seeing that from the middle generation at all?
We are. I really do think we are. Here in Houston, we have this wonderful parade that is coming up in a couple of weeks, the Art Car Parade, everyone's Art Car Parade. It's the biggest and largest parade of decorated vehicles in the world here in downtown Houston. The parade rolls at 1 o'clock, and then it's going to be broadcast. I don't know if it's on Local 2 Houston, which is the NBC affiliate, KPRC, or the call letters. I don't know whether they would do an internet streaming thing, but the broadcast is on May the 27th at 7 p.m.
Do you have to have a weird car to get in it?
It has to be decorated. It doesn't have to be decorated weird. It has to be decorated.
Poor choice of words, I guess.
Have some flowers on it.
The flower man's going to be riding his bicycle. He decks out his bicycle with flowers. Erica brings her vehicles. And, you know, we have about 250 entries from all over the United States. But to go back to your question, we have quite a number of middle generation people that are just tired of their car looking just like everybody else's car on the freeway. And so they've painted it, or they've made a mosaic on it, or they've glued things that are important to them onto the vehicle. Go to the website. Go to the Arn Show's website, www.arnshow.org, and take a look at the art cars. You won't believe some of them, Phil.
There's a, I guess you'd say, not a really a slideshow, but it kind of scrolls down of all the different things that you mentioned, the beer house, Flower Man's Place, and several other things. And that's why I encourage those of you listening, go to the web. This is, I guess you'd say, our most interactive radio program we've done in the 6 years we've been on the air, but I do encourage you to go to the web and check out those sites. They're really cool to look at. Eric and Nelson, what about the younger generation in looking at the future? Are you seeing anything really popping up that's going to be really popular or well received in the outsider field?
Well, the art car phenomenon has really sort of given a wide range of people a permission slip to express themselves. And while Barbara was talking, it reminded me of one of the phrases that's painted on my art car is combating genericana. So because everything is so very similar and you're supposed to buy a new car but only have it 2 years and then trade it in for one that's this keeping up with the Joneses yet just like everyone else, there is this major backlash of, you know what, I am an individual person. I have my own vision of what I want to drive, of where I want to live, of what I want to look like, and what I want to listen to, and what I want to say. And I think there's a wide range of people who are sick of being just like everybody else. And we're using visual ways to combat genericana, to fight against the decline of individuality within our communities, within ourselves, within our society. So it doesn't matter what form of expression it is, as long as you're strong enough to say it and tell other people about it and not stay in your safe world of, if you've chosen the art world, not just be in the art world, but be in the art world and the public world. Bridge some of those gaps and make a statement about what you believe in.
Well, Erica, if there are a small number of older people in outsider art and a chunk in the middle there and a small group in the younger generation, is that an accurate portrayal of who's involved with outsider art right now? And if that's the case, are there efforts made to train? I guess train's not really the right word to use, but to bring forward to the younger generation what outsider art is so that you can kind of build the ranks?
I think there is a huge awareness. So I think there's a lot of people in the younger generation who are aware of it, are aware of the motivations, are exploring this too.
Do you need to advertise for it?
I think it advertises it. I think we need to build understanding, because instead of just seeing something that's odd and unique and going, ooh, that's a little odd, I'm not sure if I want to go see it, we need to remember to explore our environment. And when you see the Flower Man's house, go over and talk to him. He's really a really nice guy. So instead of shutting off those things that are odd or different or unique, we need to reteach ourselves to explore these amazing, unique creations.
Would all three of you guys say that outsider artists are very approachable with their art?
Absolutely.
What I mean by that, Cleveland, is when you see people coming up to look at your art, you want them to come talk to you?
Oh, yes. Talk to me and look at my art, too, and I get my firing like that.
And
my joy.
So that art that we asked earlier, if it was alive, that's when you kind of give the life into their eyes when you're talking to them. Is that right?
Right.
It's an extension of personality.
If I've listened to this program today, I've gone to the web and seen some of these things. How do I become an outsider artist? If I'm middle-aged, what do I do?
Oh, you're already there. What do you have laying around? Put some stuff together. Paint something.
Start gluing.
What would you say, Cleveland, to an older person? And would you tell them to go ahead and get going?
I tell them to just go ahead and get going. If they just have to come in from my field, just go ahead and get to hang it up something. If don't nobody say anything about it, you just change it around and go another route.
What about you, Erica? What would you tell somebody?
I'd say stop listening to the people who say you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's usually the biggest thing stopping. I think the reason that there aren't quite so many really young outsider artist is that you've got to come to a point in your life where you realize, you know what, those rules don't have to apply to me. And when you're young, you're still listening to everybody around you saying, oh, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. And you've just got to get to the point where you can say, you know what, I'm going to make my own decisions. I'm going to do what I want to do.
You're so right.
Well, we've been talking about outsider art here today on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. I'm Phil Marriage, and the guest I've had with me that you've heard speaking from the older generation has been the Flower Man. He's Cleveland Turner from Houston down there, and you can catch some of the work that he's done on the orangeshow.org website. Speaking from the middle generation has been Barbara Hinton. She's also from Houston. She's one of the trustees of the Orange Show Center for Visionary Art, which has a great site, by the way, if you want to really see some stuff about outsider art. And then speaking from the younger generation, and she joined us us from Lucas, Kansas. Has been Erica Nelson, and she has, again, I'm going to get to say this one more time, the world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. And you might get lucky enough to, can they see it right up there in Lucas, Erica?
Or it is always open when part.
Always open when part.
Because it is a mobile museum. Yes, it is currently in the backyard. I spend a lot of time on the road, so you can always see where I'm going to be next on worldslargestthings.com.
Worldslargestthings.com. And I'll have that link on the website there, too, on our website, on YTT website, too. Again, I want to thank my guests for being with me here today, and I also want to thank especially Wendy Sherrell and Suzanne Theus from the Orange Show Center for Visionary Art in helping me find these guests for the program today. They were very helpful. And again, another thank you to Joanne Zabel for even suggesting this as a topic. It's been a lot of fun to do. I want to invite you to come back next time. Our program will be on wine. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of UALR Public Radio and comes to you from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, Arkansas.